Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
You're listening to the smartest man in talk radio.
You're going to be listening to one of the smartest people that you probably, and you know who this guy is. It's me.
He's Jim Blasingame.
I am smart. I am smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-T.
The Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 After. Thank you for joining me. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. Wherever you are, however you're listening, radio, the internet, subspace frequency, those of you who are waiting on the mothership to beam you back, we're glad you're here. Those of you who are off your meds and you're sitting there with a little aluminum foil hat on your head, we like you too, so we're glad you're here. David Dossi is with us. He's just removed his aluminum foil hat, and David is a great resource for us, and he's become a good friend. David is an intellectual property attorney. And as you know, folks, this is a topic that I've developed a pretty substantial soapbox for over the last couple of years or so, as I've come to understand what it means to be in business in the 21st century over the last few years. That's the 21st century is markedly different from the 20th century, and it has been almost since literally the moment that the calendar struck the new millennium. David Dossi, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jim. Always happy to be here.
It's good to have you back. Would you agree with me when I said that it's just phenomenal to me, David, how different these 4 years are even than the last four years of the 20th century?
Without a doubt. You know, right now I think people are really starting to appreciate that intellectual property can either make or break a lot of small businesses.
Well, and you know, when I look around and I see what people have and how they're making their revenue, and I see more and more companies are making revenue with intangible assets and not with tangible assets. I mean, as you know, the research has shown that that's true. That's not just an anecdotal observation of mine. This is research that has shown this.
Right, and the trend is just going to continue to the service based or intellectual property based industries are just going to keep growing.
Well, and look at how much more of a quality of life that we can have. I mean, that's an element of this new marketplace landscape. That's an element that really isn't talked about very much, is it? The quality of life issue.
You're right. The change from the Industrial Revolution to now, you know, the quality of life has just dramatically increased.
Well, one of the elements of that is that you can now work many cases. You can now work wherever you want to be.
Right.
Not in all cases, but in many cases you can. And that's becoming democratized. But one of the things that I want you to talk about for us as we stand here hard by to the end of another year, David, is to give us a little bit of some thoughts on how to begin thinking more about identifying, developing, executing and protecting our intellectual property for the new year.
Sure. Well, what we've done, just learning from our clients' mistakes, is identify six important or significant goals or resolutions that companies really need to focus on coming up to the first part of the year here. And if you follow these simple six steps, you'll be in such a better position with your intellectual property. It'll make a tremendous difference. The first one is very surprising to most people, but it's simple. You need to know what intellectual property you possess as a company, and you need to make sure all your employees know what you possess.
Mm-hmm.
And that's simple to state, but the number of clients that we have that, you know, their line employees have no idea that maybe they hold 5 registered trademarks or that there is confidential information that, you know, the company holds as a trade secret, that they shouldn't go out and tell people, and that they can't then go to be hired by a competitor and share that information with them. So that's just a simple point that, you know, the owners of small businesses need to really focus on identifying what intellectual property you have, what's protected and what's not protected, and make sure your employees understand that.
Well, and you know, one of the things, David, again, I mentioned a minute ago, the first thing you do is identify, but perhaps where there's even one, maybe that it might even be step two. Step one might be to just understand that you have it.
Right.
You know, some people haven't even gotten to that point yet, David. I mean, they you know, if you say, show me your intellectual property, and you know they have it, and then they say, huh? And so, but there are a few people we need to get to that point. You know, like the football coach said one time, you know, this is a football. All right, stand by. We're going to take a quick break. It's 10-10. We'll be right back with David Dossie.
After you've had it, you're in an awful fix. And then the man steps right up to the microphone.
We're back. It's 17-2. That's right, 17-2. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend David Dossie. David is an intellectual property attorney. Now, David, there was a point in time when you would have been known as a patent attorney, wouldn't you?
Right. And
you still are.
Sure. Within the last 10 years, people have really started to recognize that intellectual property includes much more than patents. So now a lot of people refer to us as intellectual property attorneys.
Well, I mean, you know, think about this, the way the screw has turned over the last few years, David. Many times, for centuries, people would hire their attorneys to protect their assets. But they would never, you know, but if you talked to them 10 or 20 years ago, and you said, okay, that's obviously a patent attorney, they would have said, well, no, that's somebody to make sure that my inventory is protected and my, you know, my trucks and all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
But more and more people are, when you say, I want somebody to help me protect my assets, more and more people will say, well, that's got to include an intellectual property attorney, formerly known as patent attorneys.
Correct.
Because of the way things are going, folks, as you know, as you've heard me say before, and David has said this on the show too, as well as some other members of our Brain Trust, and that is that more and more of the assets of corporations are it's more and more intangible and less tangible, and that's just the way it's happening. And so, David, I guess I need to say congratulations.
Well, yeah, thank you.
The world is moving in your direction, and you're going to be sitting right there ready to take advantage of that. Remind us how we can contact you if we have folks out there who would like to avail themselves of your services.
Well, you can reach us through our website, which is www.invention-protection.com.
All right.
And you can find my phone number, email address, and everything you need on the website.
All right, and the name of the law firm again?
Is Gallagher & Dossie.
All right, Gallagher & Dossie. Check that out, folks, invention-protection.com. What do we find when we get to your site, David? You got some tips and things?
We've got information about intellectual property in general. There are a lot of past newsletter articles, an article archive, if you want to call it that.
Right.
We also have book reviews for, you know, small businesses or inventors can go there, look at books that we've reviewed on intellectual property, marketing,
right,
patent applications, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And just a lot of good information.
Good. Okay, now we're talking about the six things that you think we need to do. I mentioned the a minute ago. First, we're assuming that we have their attention and that they admit that they actually have intellectual property. So the first thing is to identify it. What's the second
one? Well, the second is really develop your marketing plans before you see an attorney, because a common mistake we see is people will come to us and show us a new product they've come up with and say, well, can we protect it?
Uh-huh.
And really, before you ask if you can protect it, you need to be asking yourself, can I sell it?
Right.
You know, is it worth investing any money to protect something that there's no market for? And that it's amazing that people just get excited when they come up with a new product or a new invention that they want to immediately tell, you know, an attorney, get some protection. But you really need to look at the bigger picture and see if you can make money on it.
Right. And that might give you an indication of whether you're talking to an inventor or a business person.
Right.
Because an inventor would say, can you protect it before he find out if anybody will buy it? And a business person, you know, he or she can't wait to get it off the bench into somebody's hands.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. What's number three?
Third point is really look, as a business owner, look for interrelations between patent, trademark, and copyright. Because really, if you come out with a good new product, whether it's protectable by patent or not may not be as important as if you're first to market with a really strong trademark that everyone recognizes the name of and, you know, the associated copyright protection.
Like Nike.
And exactly.
Nike doesn't make anything.
Or the hula hoop. Or
right.
There are a whole slew of products that were never patented or protected by patent that have developed and been tremendously successful just solely based on trademark, copyright, or
right.
design.
Well, Nike didn't invent the tennis shoe.
Right.
And they don't even make tennis shoes. They hire people to make the tennis shoes for them.
Exactly.
But they've developed this brand. And right. so they don't hire attorneys to protect their shoes, their inventory. They hire attorneys to protect their brand.
Right.
To make sure that their brand is well protected and properly deployed in the marketplace. So how would we say number three? How would be the best way to say that?
I just categorize it as look for interrelations between patents, trademarks, and copyrights.
All right.
Then the fourth one is just educate your employees on critical intellectual property mistakes to avoid. And that's simple because there aren't too many mistakes that you can make. Some of them, if you're in research and development or new product development, there are very strict deadlines with regard to disclosure. Once you disclose your invention or sell your invention, you only have 12 months to apply
right.
for patent applications. And there are just simple deadlines like that that you need to be aware
That's
of.
That's the one that I think probably trips up inventors the most, don't you think?
Sure.
Is the one where if you commercialize your invention, folks, once it becomes commercialized, you've got 12 months. After that, you're foreclosed from acquiring a patent.
And even when you do that, most foreign companies don't operate on that principle.
Hmm.
Once you've sold one, well, you may still have 12 months in the United States to obtain a U.S. protection. In most foreign countries, you've already shot yourself in the
foot. Is that right?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But that won't prevent people in those foreign countries from stealing it from you, though, with it.
Right.
That's the problem. All right, stand by, Dave. We're going to take a quick break. We're visiting with our good friend David Dossi. He's an outstanding intellectual property attorney. The reason I know that is because he's done some work for me, too, very well, I might add. Tintill, stay with us. We'll be right back.
Everybody's looking for something. Something to fill in the holes.
We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Lansingame, the Small Business Advocate, and David Dossi is our guest. He's our resident intellectual property attorney. And David, give us your website again, please.
It's www.invention-protection.com.
Invention-protection.com. Did you mention a newsletter?
Yes. Yes, we have a quarterly newsletter that you can sign up for on the website.
Electronic?
Yes.
You know, I don't think I'm one of your subscribers. Am I?
I'll have to check.
I don't think I am. You need to put me on that list.
I will.
I know you're like me. You only do opt-ins. You only
right.
send to people who opt in. And I guess I knew you had a newsletter, but I'd forgotten. So make sure you can opt me in right now.
Okay, I will do that.
Let's talk about we're talking about this list of things that we need to do to tune up our understanding and our protection of our intellectual property. Are we on four or five? I think five.
We're on five.
Yeah.
And this is a big one. We see this all the time. And the key is only enter into contracts that clearly define intellectual property ownership, rights, and obligations.
Mm-hmm.
And you know this as well as anyone
because yep.
You've come across this recently.
Well, recently I had a situation where there was a, you know, it was a several-page contract but there was only like one short paragraph on ownership, and I knew that wasn't going to work.
Right, right. And we see, it's amazing, we see companies all the time. For instance, a company, we have a client that buys multi-million dollar pieces of equipment, and they take that company's standard purchase order and all the terms and conditions on the back, and they just accept them. Well, if you're buying a multi-million dollar piece of equipment, they need to be supplying it to you on your terms, not on their terms.
Right.
And people don't realize that everything there is negotiable, and any standard terms and conditions on the back of a contract are never going to be in your favor.
Well, exactly. I mean, anybody who gives you legal documents, it's written in their favor. A lease is written in the landlord's favor.
Absolutely.
Some things you may be able to change. Some things you may not be able to change.
Mm-hmm. But in those, if you're buying a $3 million piece of equipment, you don't want to agree to assume liability for that person's patent infringement. If they're building the machine, they should know whether it infringes someone else's patent.
Right.
And they should have that liability, not you as the consumer or purchaser.
Right, exactly. Huh. But and also, though, and this is one of the things that you spend a lot of time on, and that is making sure that when you enter into a contract with somebody, especially if part of your participation is you're bringing to bear on the relationship the things that you've developed, your own intellectual assets, it's got to be clear that those people have no claim to those.
Right, right. And
when I say clear, folks, I mean in very specific language.
Absolutely. And a lot of times you have joint development agreements or intellectual property is developed from you two working together.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you want the contract to identify, what happens to that intellectual property if any is developed.
Right. And also, and don't minimize the value of the content that you'll be contributing.
Right.
Sometimes, David, I'm involved where in a business transaction where the actual development of the product belongs to somebody else, but the content is mine, and we actually separate who owns what there.
Right.
If I take an apple and you have a pear and we put them together to make something else, you have the process, you may own the process to put those two together, but I own the content that made it happen.
Good example.
So whatever, folks, David, this goes back to just understanding, just having an awareness of what intellectual property is and how valuable it can be, and when you own it and it's your assets that you've developed.
Right.
All right, what's number six?
Okay, the last one is carefully consider the use and implementation of non-disclosure agreements.
Yeah.
We see people fall for this all the time, that someone gives you a non-disclosure agreement and says, this is our standard agreement. Well, number one, there are no standard agreements. And right now we're seeing a trend that people slip in very important clauses in non-disclosure agreements that have nothing to do with non-disclosure. It has to do with liability or
right.
What your rights are. So a non-disclosure agreement, more often than not, is a lot more than simply addressing non-disclosure.
So from now on, folks, when you get a non-disclosure agreement, and you will be getting more and more of those, I predict, David, in the future, all of us will, make sure that you read it and don't assume that it's just what it looks like it is on its face.
Right. And a good way to test the person that's providing it to you is to ask to immediately change the title to read Mutual Non-Disclosure Agreement.
I like that.
And have all the terms that they want it to apply to you also apply to them.
Absolutely. It should be quid pro quo. Hey, David, thank you for being here. Good job today.
Well, thank you.
We'll see you next time. David Dossie, ladies and gentlemen, he'll be back. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.